Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is writer-director Nyasa Hardiman, BAFTA award-winning Nyasa Hardiman, and we are here to talk about her new movie, Sea Fever, which she wrote and directed, and it is a entertaining, thrilling, claustrophobic creature feature, which just delights me all around. Welcome, Nyasa.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So I have to ask, this is a just delightfully crafted creature feature. I'm a fan of monster movies, but you also add in this, our protagonist who has a little bit of social anxiety, and you stick her in a claustrophobic elbow-to-elbow environment, which just heightens the tension, because I can feel the tension in her just from being too close to a lot of people. So where did this story come from?
Well, I love psychological thrillers and I love sci-fi. So I wanted to tell a tense and propulsive story that also has something kind of chewy in it that you can take away from the theater with you and think about a little bit more. And the kind of central thing that I wanted to really look at was the value of the scientific method versus magical thinking. So like you say, we've got a protagonist who really prefers to spend time alone in her lab, and she has social anxiety and she's not great with people. But as part of her doctoral studies, she has to endure a week on this ragged fishing tour, and she is miserably at odds with the close-knit crew. But once she's out in the deep Atlantic, unfortunately, they encounter, through their own transgression, an unfathomable life form. As I'm sure you know, we know more about the surface of the moon than we do about the biosphere of the deep Atlantic. And yet, as a species, we have no problem with overfishing and bottom trawling and invading that biosphere without knowing what's there. So they get ensnared by something on the boat, and the members of the crew succumb to a strange infection. And really, our protagonist has to overcome her alienation and her anxiety if she's going to help to navigate them home, facing ethical and moral and scientific and emotional challenges along the way.
Yeah, the appearance of the creature was not unexpected, but to go the entire film without ever learning anything significant about what the creature is was new. You have this new creature. It's not supernatural. It very well could be some sort of different species that we haven't seen yet. There are probably tens of thousands of species on land and in the sea that we have not even come across yet, just because we haven't looked for them. And the fact that we have no answers.
That's exactly right.
And the fact that we have no answers by the time the movie ends is just like, yeah, that's how we're kind of going here. So that was a welcome surprise. And just exploring how Siobhan deals with her anxieties and uses her scientific curiosity, her need to solve puzzles to overcome that, to figure this out, is a really, really welcome, refreshing take on a protagonist who has flaws to deal with.
Well, I'm really delighted you felt that way. I think one of the things that I really wanted to look at in the story, and one of the questions that the story poses, I hope, is that a lot of times in stories like this, and more generally, we misrecognize ourselves as existing outside of our own ecosystem, and that somehow we are the center of the world and the center of the universe, rather than acknowledging that actually we are a small part of a dynamic and integrated biosphere. Small part of our own family, our own community, our own species, and an integrated biosphere. And so what I wanted to do with the animal was say, well, you know, life just is. Life isn't some response to a particular question that we have asked. Life just is. And this animal just is. It has no rhyme or reason in the way that, you know, a lichen has no rhyme or reason. It's just life. And we don't own it, and it's not for us, and it's not against us. It's just is. And that there is no explanation of that. We don't know what the explanation of that is anymore that we know the explanation of why we're here. But what we do know is we're not the center of everything. And we've been behaving as if we are. So originally, what I wanted to do with the story was to make painfully aware how fragile our own ecosystem is and how I need to take responsibility for myself and for my neighbors and for my community and for the world. And that's, I think, what Siobhan, who's a protagonist who's neurodivergent and who's very good at thinking rationally, it's what she understands at a really primal level, is that she's a really ethical, moral person and she understands what it means to take responsibility.
I think that her central argument, once they figured some of this out, about needing to self-quarantine until they know they're not infected so they won't infect others when they get back on shore, is a highly eerily timely event given current events with the coronavirus and its spread. And her arguments about we have to think about our families, our communities, we can't just get off the ship and go about our daily business until we know we won't spread this. And I'm like, holy crap, really?
I know. It feels really weirdly appropriate, right? It's yes. Very peculiar.
So I have to ask, when did this get filmed? Because the message is a little on the nose. I'm like, okay, this is kind of scary.
Well, we filmed it in the winter, autumn winter of 2018.
Oh, wow.
So we had no idea what was coming. But I think because it's a story about taking responsibility, and what I wanted to do in the story was, I'm not a big fan of films that have villains. I think it's much more interesting if everybody in the story is really doing their best and struggling to do their best. And so, you know, the skipper who wants to bring the boat home and the skipper who wants to get everybody to hospital are doing it because they really honestly are afraid and want to get help. And I think that's a really natural human motivation, is I don't want to suffer this on my own. Get me to the community so I can get help. And I think Siobhan is offering this kind of contrary view, going, there is no help. There is only our taking responsibility. We are the help. There's only our taking responsibility for what's happening. And that feels weirdly appropriate now. But I feel like actually what I was trying to get at was this idea of taking responsibility, mm-hmm. of the fact that we're mm-hmm. all in this together.
Yeah, the portrayal of all the different characters who have different personal motivations. There is no evil villain here. There is no malevolent entity. You have a sea creature who just wants to live and eat and breed. And you have people who want to make a living. And bad choices lead to a cascade of bad timing and unfortunate events. And there is no, you know, great evil to be fought. It's just a whole lot of bad stuff happening at the same time. And you have that, it's almost a cosmic feel, like we are so small in this environment, in this world, we really don't matter, but we could unintentionally facilitate the end of us if we don't do this right.
I'm so delighted that that's what you read into it, because that's what I hope the story is about, is that, you know, our ecosystem is incredibly fragile. And whether that be our human ecosystem of our own interpersonal relationships right now, or whether that mean more broadly with the climate crisis, and that we need everybody. One of the other things that I really wanted to bring into the story was this idea that there's an autistic writer called Zosia Sacks who remarked that in order to right itself, the ship of humanity requires all hands on deck. And I really consciously wanted this story to have an equal number of men and women, have people who are neurodivergent, and have people of all different kinds of ethnicities, in the story, all of whom contribute and all of whom are valuable and all of whom bring their the richness of their lived experience and their strengths and weaknesses into the story. You know, the married couple who own the boat are trying to do their best. They're positioned at the edge of this raw economic need and they're trying to provide for their crew. And so they feel forced to act against urgent ecological concerns so that they can provide this necessary, desperate income that their crew really needs.
Yeah, the desperation of the situation really, really does come across. And what I realized, I think, after I had finished the movie was how, even though there are different subgroups in the crew, they all make up a family. And even though at the beginning, Siobhan is kind of treated as an outsider, towards the end, they have incorporated her into their own as a member of the family, even though she's still a little unsure. And I thought that was really poignant.
Oh, I'm really delighted. I'm really delighted because, of course, that is what the story is, right? Is that we meet Siobhan at the beginning of the story and she's really, really good at her work, but she's very vulnerable in that she's bad with people. So she's lonely and it's painful. It's painful to be lonely. And when she goes onto the boat, she knows that she's bad with people. She knows she doesn't know how to make friends. She doesn't know how to deal with people in a way that makes them like her. And so she just withdraws and she's having this incredibly isolated experience. And over the course of the story, she opens up. And she learns how to, she forms a number of really, really powerful relationships, including one really powerful relationship mm-hmm. towards the end. And that is her transformation from being somebody who's very isolated to somebody who becomes a natural leader.
Yeah, this one's a lot of fun. I had heard a lot about it. I've seen other people recommend it, and it's on my list of films to recommend as well. Now, this will be available on digital on April 10th. Where are the best places for people to go check it out?
Well, it's being distributed by Dust, which is an imprint of Gunpowder and Sky. So it'll be available as video on demand through Dust.
Okay. Well, we will dig up some locations to find that because, like I said, this is one really, really should check out. And I thank you for making this and for in this weird, weird time of desocialization for sharing it with us.
Well, thank you very much. I've just been told there is seafever.com.
Seafever.com. All right. We will have links to that.
Seafevermovie.com.
I'll find the right link and put it. I will find the right link and put it in the show notes. Niessa, thank you so much for your time today.
A great pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
And we'll be back with more Slices Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic, we've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Riff Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sea Fever is the kind of indie creature feature sci-fi horror movie that I wait for. This is a delightful, tense sort of thriller, mystery, monster movie, survival kind of thing. It'll remind you maybe a little bit of The Abyss. At least that's the first movie I thought of when we got into the claustrophobia of the setting. But yeah, definitely check this out. Links in the show notes. There will also be a live stream premiere of this film. Gunpowder and Sky and, you know, their sci-fi label Dust is going to do a ultimate at-home experience where you can live stream Sea Fever on Thursday, April 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern. And the screening will be followed by a Q&A with the stars, Hermione Corfield and Connie Nielsen, and the director, writer-director, Nyessa Hardiman. This will play at seafever.watchdust.com. Have a link to that in the show notes as well. But you can pay. They're going to have like a small pay-per-view fee, and you'll get to watch a live stream of the feature, Sea Fever, followed by the Q&A I just described. And if you can't attend that event, the regular on-demand and digital will be available on April 10th, which is next Friday. But yeah, this one is worth checking out. It's a lot of fun. And this is what indie movies should be, in my opinion. A couple of TV-related things to mention. The season and series finale of The Magicians was this past week. The season finale, season two finale of Manifest will be coming up Monday night. And what else? Something debuted this week. Ah, Vagrant Queen. Vagrant Queen debuted on Sci-Fi Channel, and it's fun, but hard to wrap your head around. You need to be paying attention, so if you're the type of person that likes to watch TV distracted, with tweeting, watching Twitter, live tweeting, or just doing other stuff, Vagrant Queen is one you should pay attention to, especially through the first episode. I'm still trying to wrap my head around some of it. I will probably rewatch several of those to get a better feel for it. But so far, it's a lot of fun. And it kind of makes me want to go hunt down the graphic novels that these are based on. We shall see. What else? That's all I have off the top of my head right now, but if you have any questions or comments or suggestions, stuff to say, hey, Summer, you're kind of late on this. Why don't you go check this out? Feel free to call in. The number is 602-635-6976. Or you can shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through Apple Podcasts, through Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio Podcast, and Player FM. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let folks know that you are enjoying this podcast, and maybe other folks should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. And yes, I will indulge in a conversation every now and then, if the topic suits my curiosity or interest. You can also follow us on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And of course, there is the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on over, check out our other interviews, leave comments on the reviews we've done, on the interviews we've done. That's what we are here for. I'd like to thank everyone who, through this trying time, is still supporting the efforts here. You really are helping me keep all of this online. Slice of Sci-Fi, Babylon Podcast, Writers After Dark, Charlie Jade, a few other websites and shows. All of it is able to keep humming online, thanks in part to all of your support. So thank you very much. If you would like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if a monthly pledge is something you can't commit to at the time, please consider an occasional donation now and then. That link is paypal.me/scifisummer. And yes, this coming week will see me attempting one more time to distribute swag to our Patreon supporters. So if you are supporting through Patreon, check your Patreon messages and let me know where to send you your swag. But yeah, that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.